Stirred up, as was afterwards seen, by the emissaries of Sauron, they made a sudden assault upon Gondor, and King Narmakil II was slain in battle with them beyond Anduin in 1856. The people of eastern and southern Rovanion were enslaved, and the frontiers of Gondor were for that time withdrawn to the Anduin and the Emmenweal. At this time it is thought that the Ringwraiths re-entered Mordor. Kalimetar, son of Narmakil II, helped by a revolt in Rovanion, avenged his father with a great victory over the Easterlings upon Dagolad in 1899. And for a while the peril was averted. It was in the reign of Arafant in the north, and Ondaher, son of Kalimeta, in the south, that the two kingdoms again took counsel together after long silence and estrangement. For at last they perceived that some single power and will was directing the assault from many quarters upon the survivors of Numenor. It was at that time that Arvedwë, heir of Arafant, wedded Firiel, daughter of Ondaher, 1940. But neither kingdom was able to send help to the other, for Angmar renewed its attack upon Arthedain, at the same time as the Wainriders reappeared in great force. Many of the Wainriders now passed south of Mordor, and made alliance with men of Khand and near Harad. And in this great assault from north and south, Gondor came near to destruction. In 1944, King Ondaher and both his sons, Artamir and Faramir, fell in battle north of the Morannon, and the enemy poured into Ithilien. But Eärnil, captain of the southern army, won a great victory in South Ithilien, and destroyed the army of Harad that had crossed the river Poros. Hastening north, he gathered to him all that he could of the retreating northern army, and came up against the main camp of the Wainriders while they were feasting and revelling, believing that Gondor was overthrown, and that nothing remained but to take the spoil. Eärnil stormed the camp, and set fire to the Wains, and drove the enemy in a great rout out of Ithilien. A great part of those who fled before him perished in the dead marshes. On the death of Ondaher and his sons, Arvedwë of the North Kingdom claimed the crown of Gondor as the direct descendant of Isildur, and as the husband of Firiel, only surviving child of Ondaher. The claim was rejected. In this, Pelennor, the steward of King Ondaher, played the chief part. The Council of Gondor answered, "The crown and royalty of Gondor belong solely to the heirs of Meneldil, son of Anarion, to whom Isildur relinquished this realm. In Gondor this heritage is reckoned through the sons only, and we have not heard that the law is otherwise in Arnor." To this Arvedwë replied, "Elendil had two sons, of whom Isildur was the elder and the heir of his father. We have heard that the name of Elendil stands to this day at the head of the line of the kings of Gondor, since he was accounted the High King of all lands of the Dúnedain. While Elendil still lived, the conjoint rule in the south was committed to his sons. But when Elendil fell, Isildur departed to take up the High Kingship of his father, and committed the rule in the south in like manner to the son of his brother. He did not relinquish his royalty in Gondor, nor intend that the realm of Elendil should be divided for ever. Moreover, in Numenor of old, the sceptre descended to the eldest child of the king, whether man or woman. It is true that the law has not been observed in the lands of exile ever troubled by war. But such was the law of our people, to which we now refer, seeing that the sons of Ondaher died childless. That law was made in Numenor, as we have learned from the king, when Tar-Aldarion, the sixth king, left only one child, a daughter. She became the first ruling queen, Tar-An-Kalime. But the law was otherwise before her time. Tar-Elendil, the fourth king, was succeeded by his son Tar-Meneldor, though his daughter Silmarion was the elder. It was, however, from Silmarion that Elendil was descended. To this Gondor made no answer. The crown was claimed by Eärnil, the victorious captain, and it was granted to him with the approval of all the Dúnedain in Gondor, since he was of the royal house. He was the son of Siriondil, son of Kalimakil, son of Alkirias, brother of Narmakil II. Arvedui did not press his claim, for he had neither the power nor the will to oppose the choice of the Dúnedain of Gondor, yet the claim was never forgotten by his descendants, even when their kingship had passed away. For the time was now drawing near when the North Kingdom would come to an end. Arvedui was indeed the last king, as his name signifies. It is said that this name was given to him at his birth by Malbeth the seer, who said to his father, "Arvedui you shall call him, for he will be the last in Arthedain, though a choice will come to the Dúnedain, and if they take the one that seems less hopeful, then your son will change his name and become king of a great realm. If not, then much sorrow and many lives of men shall pass until the Dúnedain arise and are united again." In Gondor also one king only followed Eärnil. It may be that if the crown and the scepter had been united, then the kingship would have been maintained and much evil averted. But Eärnil was a wise man and not arrogant, even if, as to most men in Gondor, the realm in Arthedain seemed a small thing for all the lineage of its lords. He sent messages to Arvedui, announcing that he received the crown of Gondor according to the laws and the needs of the South Kingdom. "But I do not forget the loyalty of Arnor, nor deny our kinship, nor wish that the realms of Elendil should be estranged. I will send to your aid, when you have need, so far as I am able." It was, however, long before Eärnil felt himself sufficiently secure to do as he promised. King Arafant continued with dwindling strength to hold off the assaults of Angmar, and Arvedui, when he succeeded, did likewise. But at last, in the autumn of 1973, messages came to Gondor that Arthedain was in great straits, and that the Witch King was preparing a last stroke against it. Then Eärnil sent his son Eärnor north with a fleet, as swiftly as he could, and with as great strength as he could spare. Too late. Before Eärnor reached the havens of Lindon, the Witch King had conquered Arthedain, and Arvedui had perished. But when Eärnor came to the Grey Havens, there was joy and great wonder among both elves and men. So great in draught, and so many were his ships, that they could scarcely find harborage, though both the Harlond and the Forlond also were filled. And from them descended an army of power, with munition and provision for a war of great kings. Or so it seemed to the people of the north, though this was but a small sending force of the whole might of Gondor. Most of all, the horses were praised, for many of them came from the vales of Anduin, and with them were riders tall and fair, and proud princes of Rohanion. Then Círdan summoned all who would come to him, from Lindon or Arnor, and when all was ready, the host crossed the Lune and marched north to challenge the Witch King of Angmar. He was now dwelling, it is said, in Fornost, which he had filled with evil folk, usurping the house and rule of the kings. In his pride, he did not await the onset of his enemies and his stronghold, but went out to meet them, thinking to sweep them, as others before, into the Lune. But the host of the west came down on him out of the hills of Evendim, and there was a great battle on the plain between Nenunial and the North Downs. The forces of Angmar were already giving way and retreating towards Fornost when the main body of the horsemen that had passed round the hills came down from the north and scattered them in a great rout. Then the Witch King, with all that he could gather from the wreck, fled northwards, seeking his own land of Angmar. Before he could gain the shelter of Carn Doom, the cavalry of Gondor overtook him, with Eärnor riding at their head. At the same time a force, under Glorfindel the Elf Lord, came up out of Rivendell. Then so utterly was Angmar defeated that not a man nor an orc of that realm remained west of the mountains. But it is said that when all was lost, suddenly the Witch King himself appeared, black-robed and black-masked, upon a black horse. Fear fell upon all who beheld him, but he singled out the captain of Gondor for the fullness of his hatred, and with a terrible cry he rode straight upon him. Eärnor would have withstood him, but his horse could not endure that onset, and it swerved and bore him far away before he could master it. Then the Witch King laughed, and none that heard it ever forgot the horror of that cry. But Glorfindel rode up then on his white horse, and in the midst of his laughter the Witch King turned to flight and passed into the shadows. For night came down on the battlefield, and he was lost, and none saw whither he went. Eärnor now rode back, but Glorfindel, looking into the gathering dark, said, "Do not pursue him. He will not return to this land. Far off yet is his doom, and not by the hand of man will he fall." These words many remembered, but Eärnor was angry, desiring only to be avenged for his disgrace. So ended the evil realm of Angmar, and so did Eärnor, captain of Gondor, earn the chief hatred of the Witch King, but many years were still to pass before that was revealed. It was thus in the reign of King Eärnil, as later became clear, that the Witch King, escaping from the north, came to Mordor, and there gathered the other Ringwraiths, of whom he was the chief. But it was not until 2000 that they issued from Mordor by the pass of Cidith Ungol and laid siege to Minas Ithil. This they took in 2002, and captured the Palantir of the Tower. They were not expelled while the Third Age lasted, and Minas Ithil became a place of fear, and was renamed Minas Morgul. Many of the people that still remained in Ithilien deserted it. Eärnor was a man like his father in valour, but not in wisdom. He was a man of strong body and hot mood, but he would take no wife, for his only pleasure was in fighting, or in the exercise of arms. His prowess was such that none in Gondor could stand against him in those weapon sports in which he delighted, seeming rather a champion than a captain or king, and retaining his vigour and skill to a later age than was then usual. When Eärnor received the crown in 2043, the king of Minas Morgul challenged him to single combat, taunting him that he had not dared to stand before him in battle in the north. For that time, Mardil the steward restrained the wrath of the king. Minas Arnor, which had become the chief city of the realm since the days of King Telemnar, and the residence of the kings, was now renamed Minas Tirith, as a city ever on guard against the evil of Morgul. Eärnor had held the crown only 7 years when the lord of Morgul repeated his challenge, taunting the king that to the faint heart of his youth he had now added the weakness of age. Then Mardil could no longer restrain him, and he rode with a small escort of knights to the gates of Minas Morgul. None of that riding were ever heard of again. It was believed in Gondor that the faithless enemy had trapped the king, and that he had died in torment in Minas Morgul. But since there were no witnesses of his death, Mardil, the good steward, ruled Gondor in his name for many years. Now the descendants of the kings had become few. Their numbers had been greatly diminished in the kinstrife, whereas since that time the kings had become jealous and watchful of those near kin. Often those on whom suspicion fell had fled to Umbar and there joined the rebels, while others had renounced their lineage and taken wives not of Numenorean blood. So it was that no claimant to the crown could be found who was of pure blood, or whose claim all would allow. And all feared the memory of the kinstrife, knowing that if any such dissension arose again, then Gondor would perish. Therefore, though the years lengthened, the steward continued to rule Gondor, and the crown of Elendil lay in the lap of King Earnil in the houses of the dead, where Earnor had left it. The Stewards. The house of the stewards was called the House of Húrin, for they were descendants of the steward of King Minardil, Húrin of Eminardnin, a man of high Numenorean race. After his day, the kings had always chosen their stewards from among his descendants, and after the days of Pelennor, the stewardship became hereditary as a kingship, from father to son or nearest king. Each new steward indeed took office with the oath to hold rod and rule in the name of the king until he shall return. But these soon became words of ritual little heeded, for the stewards exercised all the power of the kings. Yet many in Gondor still believed that a king would indeed return in some time to come, and some remembered the ancient line of the North, which it was rumoured still lived on in the shadows. But against such thoughts the ruling stewards hardened their hearts. Nonetheless, the stewards never sat on the ancient throne, and they wore no crown, and held no sceptre. They bore a white rod only as the token of their office, and their banner was white without charge. But the royal banner had been sable, upon which was displayed a white tree in blossom beneath seven stars. After Mardil Voronwë, who was reckoned the first of the line, there followed the 24 ruling stewards of Gondor, until the time of Denethor II, the 26th and last. At first they had quiet, for those were the days of the watchful peace, during which Sauron withdrew before the power of the White Council, and the Ringwraiths remained hidden in Morgul Vale. But from the time of Denethor the First, there was never full peace again, and even when Gondor had no great or open war, its borders were under constant threat. In the last years of Denethor the First, the race of Uruks, black orcs of great strength, first appeared out of Mordor, and in 2475 they swept across Ithilien and took Osgiliath. Boromir, son of Denethor, after whom Boromir of the Nine Walkers was later named, defeated them and regained Ithilien. But Osgiliath was finally ruined, and its great stone bridge was broken. No people dwelt there afterwards. Boromir was a great captain, and even the Witch King feared him. He was noble and fair of face, a man strong in body and in will, but he received a Morgul wound in that war which shortened his days, and he became shrunken with pain and died 12 years after his father. After him began the long rule of Cirion. He was watchful and wary, but the reach of Gondor had grown short, and he could do little more than defend his borders, while his enemies, or the power that moved them, prepared strokes against him that he could not hinder. The corsairs harried his coasts, but it was in the north that his chief peril lay. In the wide lands of Rovanion, between Mirkwood and the River Running, a fierce people now dwelt, wholly under the shadow of Dol Guldur. Often they made raids through the forest, until the Vale of Anduin, south of the Gladden, was largely deserted. These Balchoth were constantly increased by others of like kind that came in from the east, whereas the people of Cullenarthen had dwindled. Cirion was hard put to it to hold the line of the Anduin. Foreseeing the storm, Cirion sent north for aid, but over late. For in that year, 2510, the Balchoth, having built many great boats and rafts on the east shores of Anduin, swarmed over the river and swept away the defenders. An army marching up from the south was cut off and driven north over the Limlight, and there it was suddenly attacked by a horde of orcs from the mountains and pressed towards the Anduin. Then out of the north there came help beyond hope, and the horns of the Rohirrim were first heard in Gondor. Eol the Young came with his riders and swept away the enemy, and pursued the Balchoth to the death over the fields of Cullenarthen. Cirion granted to Eol that land to dwell in, and he swore to Cirion the oath of Eol, of friendship at need or at call to the lords of Gondor. In the days of Beren, the 19th steward, an even greater peril came upon Gondor. Three great fleets, long prepared, came up from Umbar and the Harad, and assailed the coasts of Gondor in great force, and the enemy made many landings, even as far north as the mouth of the Isen. At the same time the Rohirrim were assailed from the west and east, and their land was overrun, and they were driven into the dales of the White Mountains. In that year, 2758, the long winter began with cold and great snows out of the north and the east, which lasted for almost 5 months. Helm of Rohan and both his sons perished in that war, and there was misery and death in Eriador and in Rohan. But in Gondor, south of the mountains, things were less evil, and before spring came Beregond, son of Beren, had overcome the invaders. At once he sent aid to Rohan. He was the greatest captain that had arisen in Gondor since Boromir, and when he succeeded his father, 2763, Gondor began to recover its strength. But Rohan was slower to be healed of the hurts that it had received. It was for this reason that Beren welcomed Saruman, and gave to him the keys of Orthonk, and from that year on Saruman dwelt in Isengard. It was in the days of Beregond that the war of the dwarves and orcs was fought in the Misty Mountains, of which only rumour came south, until the orcs, fleeing from Nandohirion, attempted to cross Rohan and establish themselves in the White Mountains. There was fighting for many years in the dales before that danger was ended. When Belecthor II, the 21st steward, died, the white tree died also in Minas Tirith, but it was left standing until the king returns, for no seedling could be found. In the days of Turin II, the enemies of Gondor began to move again, for Sauron was grown again to power, and the day of his arising was drawing near. All but the hardiest of its people deserted Ithilien and removed west over Anduin, for the land was infested by Mordor orcs. It was Turin that built secret refuges for his soldiers in Ithilien, of which Heneth Arnun was the longest guarded and manned. He also fortified again the Isle of Cair Andros to defend Anorion. Cair Andros means ship of long foam, for the isle was shaped like a great ship, with a high prow pointing north, against which the white foam of Anduin broke on sharp rocks. But his chief peril lay in the south, where the Haradrim had occupied South Gondor, and there was much fighting along the Poros. When Ithilien was invaded in great strength, King Folkwine of Rohan fulfilled the oath of Eol, and repaid his debts for the aid brought by Beregond, sending many men to Gondor. With their aid, Turin won a victory at the crossing of the Poros. But the sons of Folkwine both fell in the battle. The riders buried them after the fashion of their people, and they were laid in one mound, for they were twin brothers. Long it stood, Houth in Gwanor, high upon the shore of the river, and the enemies of Gondor feared to pass it. Turgon followed Turin, but of his time it is chiefly remembered that 2 years ere his death Sauron arose again, and declared himself openly, and he re-entered Mordor long prepared for him. Then the Barad-dûr was raised once more, and Mount Doom burst into flame, and the last of the folk of Ithilien fled far away. When Turgon died, Saruman took Isengard for his own, and fortified it. Ecthelion the Second, son of Turgon, was a man of wisdom. With what power was left to him, he began to strengthen his realm against the assault of Mordor. He encouraged all men of worth from near or far to enter his service, and to those who proved trustworthy he gave rank and reward. In much that he did, he had the aid and advice of a great captain whom he loved above all. Thorongil, men called him in Gondor, the Eagle of the Star, for he was swift and keen-eyed, and wore a silver star upon his cloak. But no one knew his true name, nor in what land he was born. He came to Ecthelion from Rohan, where he had served the king Thengal, but he was not one of the Rohirrim. He was a great leader of men, by land or by sea, but he departed into the shadows whence he came, before the days of Ecthelion were ended. Thorongil often counselled Ecthelion that the strength of the rebels in Umbar was a great peril to Gondor, and a threat to the fiefs of the south that would prove deadly if Sauron moved to open war. At last he got leave of the steward and gathered a small fleet, and he came to Umbar unlooked for by night, and there burned a great part of the ships of the corsairs. He himself overthrew the captain of the haven in battle upon the quays, and then he withdrew his fleet with small loss. But when they came back to Pelagia, to men's grief and wonder, he would not return to Minas Tirith, where great honour awaited him. He sent a message of farewell to Ecthelion, saying, "Other tasks now call me, Lord, and much time and many perils must pass ere I come again to Gondor, if that be my fate." Though none could guess what those tasks might be, nor what summons he had received, it was known whither he went. For he took boat, and crossed over Anduin, and there he said farewell to his companions, and went on alone, and when he was last seen, his face was towards the Mountains of Shadow. There was dismay in the city at the departure of Thorongil, and to all men it seemed a great loss, unless it were to Denethor, the son of Ecthelion, a man now ripe for the stewardship, to which after 4 years he succeeded on the death of his father. Denethor the Second was a proud man, tall, valiant, and more kingly than any man that had appeared in Gondor for many lives of men, and he was wise also, and far-sighted, and learned in law. Indeed, he was as like to Thorongil as to one of nearest kin, and yet was ever placed second to the stranger in the hearts of men and the esteem of his father. At the time, many thought that Thorongil had departed before his rival became his master, though indeed Thorongil had never himself vied with Denethor, nor held himself higher than the servant of his father. And in one matter only were their counsels to the steward at variance. Thorongil often warned Ecthelion not to put trust in Saruman the White in Isengard, but to welcome rather Gandalf the Grey. For there was little love between Denethor and Gandalf, and after the days of Ecthelion there was less welcome for the Grey Pilgrim in Minas Tirith. Therefore later, when all was made clear, many believed that Denethor, who was subtle in mind and looked further and deeper than other men of his day, had discovered who this stranger Thorongil in truth was, and suspected that he and Mithrandir designed to supplant him. When Denethor became steward, 2984, he proved a masterful lord, holding the rule of all things in his own hand. He said little. He listened to counsel, and then followed his own mind. He had married late, taking as wife Finduilas, daughter of Ardrahil of Dol Amroth. She was a lady of great beauty and gentle heart, but before 12 years had passed, she died. Denethor loved her, in his fashion, more dearly than any other, unless it were the elder of the sons that she bore him. But it seemed to men that she withered in the guarded city, as a flower of the seaward vales set upon a barren rock. The shadow in the east filled her with horror, and she turned her eyes ever south to the sea that she missed. After her death, Denethor became more grim and silent than before, and would sit long alone in his tower, deep in thought, foreseeing that the assault of Mordor would come in his time. It was afterwards believed that, needing knowledge, but being proud, and trusting in his own strength of will, he dared to look in the palantir of the White Tower. None of the stewards had dared to do this, nor even the kings Eärnil and Eärnor, after the fall of Minas Ithil when the palantir of Isildur came into the hands of the enemy. For the stone of Minas Tirith was the palantir of Anarion, most close in accord with the one that Sauron possessed. In this way, Denethor gained his great knowledge of things that passed in his realm, and far beyond his borders, at which men marvelled. But he bought the knowledge dearly, being aged, before his time, by his contest with the will of Sauron. Thus pride increased in Denethor together with despair, until he saw in all the deeds of that time only a single combat between the Lord of the White Tower and the Lord of the Barad-dûr, and mistrusted all others who resisted Sauron unless they served himself alone. So time drew on to the War of the Ring, and the sons of Denethor grew to manhood. Boromir, 5 years the elder, beloved by his father, was like him in face and pride, but in little else. Rather, he was a man after the sort of King Eärnor of old, taking no wife, and delighting chiefly in arms, fearless and strong, but caring little for lore, save the tales of old battles. Faramir, the younger, was like him in looks, but otherwise in mind. He read the hearts of men as shrewdly as his father, but what he read moved him sooner to pity than to scorn. He was gentle in bearing, and a lover of lore and of music, and therefore by many in those days his courage was judged less than his brother's. But it was not so, except that he did not seek glory in danger without a purpose. He welcomed Gandalf at such times as he came to the city, and he learned what he could from his wisdom, and in this, as in many other matters, he displeased his father. Yet between the brothers there was great love, and had been since childhood, when Boromir was the helper and protector of Faramir. No jealousy or rivalry had arisen between them since, for their father's favour or for the praise of men. It did not seem possible to Faramir that anyone in Gondor could rival Boromir, heir of Denethor, captain of the White Tower, and of like mind was Boromir. Yet it proved otherwise at the test. But of all that befell these three in the War of the Ring, much is said elsewhere. And after the war, the days of the ruling stewards came to an end, for the heir of Isildur and Anarion returned, and the kingship was renewed, and the standard of the White Tree flew once more from the Tower of Ecthelion. Here follows a part of the tale of Aragorn and Arwen. Arador was the grandfather of the king. His son, Arathorn, sought in marriage Gilrain the Fair, daughter of Dirhael, who was himself a descendant of Arnath. To this marriage Dirhael was opposed, for Gilrain was young, and had not reached the age at which the women of the Dúnedain were accustomed to marry. "Moreover," he said, "Arathorn is a stern man of full age, and will be chieftain sooner than men looked for, yet my heart forebodes that he will be short-lived." "But Ivorwen, his wife, who was also foresighted, answered, "The more need of haste. The days are darkening before the storm, and great things are to come. If these two wed now, hope may be born for our people. But if they delay, it will not come while this age lasts." And it happened that when Arathorn and Gilrain had been married only 1 year, Arador was taken by hill trolls in the cold fells north of Rivendell and was slain. And Arathorn became chieftain of the Dúnedain. The next year Gilrain bore him a son, and he was called Aragorn. But Aragorn was only 2 years old when Arathorn went riding against the orcs with the sons of Elrond, and he was slain by an orc arrow that pierced his eye. And so he proved indeed short-lived for one of his race, being but 60 years old when he fell. Then Aragorn, being now the heir of Isildur, was taken with his mother to dwell in the house of Elrond. And Elrond took the place of his father, and came to love him as a son of his own. But he was called Estel, that is, Hope, and his true name and lineage were kept secret at the bidding of Elrond, for the wise then knew that the enemy was seeking to discover the heir of Isildur, if any remained upon earth. But when Estel was only 20 years of age, it chanced that he returned to Rivendell after great deeds in the company of the sons of Elrond. And Elrond looked at him and was pleased, for he saw that he was fair and noble, and was early come to manhood, though he would yet become greater in body and in mind. That day, therefore, Elrond called him by his true name, and told him who he was and whose son, and he delivered to him the heirlooms of his house. "Here is the ring of Barahir," he said, "the token of our kinship from afar, and here also are the shards of Narsil. With these you may yet do great deeds, for I foretell that the span of your life shall be greater than the measure of men, unless evil befalls you, or you fail at the test. But the test will be hard and long. The sceptre of Annúminas I withhold, for you have yet to earn it." The next day, at the hour of sunset, Aragorn walked alone in the woods, and his heart was high within him, and he sang, for he was full of hope, and the world was fair. And suddenly, even as he sang, he saw a maiden walking on a greensward among the white stems of the birches. And he halted amazed, thinking that he had strayed into a dream, or else that he had received the gift of the elf minstrels, who can make the things of which they sing appear before the eyes of those that listen. For Aragorn had been singing a part of the Lay of Lúthien, which tells of the meeting of Lúthien and Beren in the forest of Neldoreth. And behold, there Lúthien walked before his eyes in Rivendell, clad in a mantle of silver and blue, fair as the twilight in Elvenhome. Her dark hair strayed in a sudden wind, and her brows were bound with gems like stars. For a moment Aragorn gazed in silence, but fearing that she would pass away and never be seen again, he called to her, crying, "Tinúviel! Tinúviel!" even as Beren had done in the elder days long ago. Then the maiden turned to him and smiled, and she said, "Who are you? And why do you call me by that name?" And he answered, "Because I believed you to be indeed Lúthien Tinúviel, of whom I was singing. But if you are not she, then you walk in her likeness." "So many have said," she answered gravely. "Yet her name is not mine, though maybe my doom will be not unlike hers. But who are you?" "Estel I was called," he said. "But I am Aragorn, Arathorn's son, Isildur's heir, lord of the Dúnedain." Yet even in the saying he felt that this high lineage, in which his heart had rejoiced, was now of little worth, and as nothing compared to her dignity and loveliness. But she laughed merrily and said, "Then we are akin from afar, for I am Arwen, Elrond's daughter, and am named also Undomiel." "Often is it seen," said Aragorn, "that in dangerous days men hide their chief treasure. Yet I marvel at Elrond and your brothers, for though I've dwelt in this house from childhood, I have heard no word of you. How comes it that we have never met before? Surely your father has not kept you locked in his hoard? No, she said, and looked up at the mountains that rose in the east. I have dwelt for a time in the land of my mother's kin, in far Lothlorien. I have but lately returned to visit my father again. It is many years since I have walked in Imladris. Then Aragorn wondered, for she had seemed of no greater age than he, who had lived yet no more than a score of years in Middle-earth. But Arwen looked in his eyes and said, Do not wonder, for the children of Elrond have the life of the Eldar. Then Aragorn was abashed, for he saw the elven light in her eyes and the wisdom of many days, yet from that hour he loved Arwen Undomiel, daughter of Elrond. In the days that followed, Aragorn fell silent, and his mother perceived that some strange thing had befallen him, and at last he yielded to her questions and told her of the meeting in the twilight of the trees. My son, said Gilrain, your aim is high, even for the descendant of many kings, for this lady is the noblest and fairest that now walks the earth, and it is not fit that mortals should wed with the elfkin. Yet we have some part in that kinship, said Aragorn, if the tale of my forefathers is true that I have learned. It is true, said Gilrain, but that was long ago, and in another age of this world, before our race was diminished. Therefore I am afraid, for without the good will of Master Elrond, the heirs of Isildur will soon come to an end. But I do not think that you will have the good will of Elrond in this matter. Then bitter will my days be, and I will walk in the wild alone, said Aragorn. That will indeed be your fate, said Gilrain. But though she had in a measure the foresight of her people, she said no more to him of her foreboding, nor did she speak to anyone of what her son had told her. But Elrond saw many things and read many hearts. One day, therefore, before the fall of the year, he called Aragorn to his chamber, and he said, Aragorn, Arathorn's son, lord of the Dúnedain, listen to me. A great doom awaits you, either to rise above the height of all your fathers since the days of Elendil, or to fall into darkness with all that is left of your kin. Many years of trial lie before you. You shall neither have wife nor bind any woman to you in troth, until your time comes and you are found worthy of it. Then Aragorn was troubled, and he said, Can it be that my mother has spoken of this? No, indeed, said Elrond. Your own eyes have betrayed you. But I do not speak of my daughter alone. You shall be betrothed to no man's child as yet. But as for Arwen the Fair, lady of Imladris and of Lorien, even star of her people, she is of lineage greater than yours, and she has lived in the world already so long that to her you are but as a yearling shoot beside a young birch of many summers. She is too far above you, and so, I think, it may well seem to her. But even if it were not so, and her heart turned towards you, I shall still be grieved because of the doom that is laid on us. What is that doom? Said Aragorn. That so long as I abide here, she shall live with the youth of the Eldar, answered Elrond, and when I depart, she shall go with me, if she so chooses. I see, said Aragorn, that I have turned my eyes to a treasure no less dear than the treasure of Thingol that Beren once desired. Such is my fate. Then suddenly the foresight of his kindred came to him, and he said, But lo, Master Elrond, the years of your abiding run short at last, and the choice must soon be laid on your children to part either with you or with Middle-earth. Truly, said Elrond, soon as we account it, though many years of men must still pass. But there will be no choice before Arwen, my beloved, unless you, Aragorn Arathorn's son, come between us, and bring one of us, you or me, to a bitter parting beyond the end of the world. You do not know yet what you desire of me." He sighed, and after a while, looking gravely upon the young man, he said again, "The years will bring what they will. We will speak no more of this until many have passed. The days darken, and much evil is to come." Then Aragorn took leave lovingly of Elrond, and the next day he said farewell to his mother, and to the house of Elrond, and to Arwen, and he went out into the wild. For nearly 30 years he laboured in the cause against Sauron, and he became a friend of Gandalf the Wise, from whom he gained much wisdom. With him he made many perilous journeys, but as the years wore on he went more often alone. His ways were hard and long, and he became somewhat grim to look upon, unless he chanced to smile. And yet he seemed to men worthy of honour, as a king that is in exile, when he did not hide his true shape. For he went in many guises, and won renown under many names. He rode in the host of the Rohirrim, and fought for the Lord of Gondor by land and by sea. And then, in the hour of victory, he passed out to the knowledge of men of the west, and went alone far into the east and deep into the south, exploring the hearts of men, both evil and good, and uncovering the plots and devices of the servants of Sauron. Thus he became at last the most hardy of living men, skilled in their crafts and lore, and was yet more than they, for he was elven wise, and there was a light in his eyes that when they were kindled few could endure. His face was sad and stern, because of the doom that was laid on him, and yet hope dwelt ever in the depths of his heart, from which mirth would arise at times like a spring from the rock. It came to pass that when Aragorn was 49 years of age, he returned from perils on the dark confines of Mordor, where Sauron now dwelt again, and was busy with evil. He was weary, and he wished to go back to Rivendell and rest there for a while, ere he journeyed into the far countries. And on his way he came to the borders of Lorien, and was admitted to the hidden land by the Lady Galadriel. He did not know it, but Arwen Undomiel was also there, dwelling again for a time with the kin of her mother. She was little changed, for the mortal years had passed her by. Yet her face was more grave, and her laughter now seldom was heard. But Aragorn was grown to full stature of body and mind, and Galadriel bade him cast aside his way-worn garment, and she clothed him in silver and white, with a cloak of elven grey and a bright gem on his brow. Then, more than any kind of men, he appeared, and seemed rather an elf-lord from the Isles of the West. And thus it was that Arwen first beheld him again after their long parting. And as he came walking towards her, under the trees of Carascalarthon, laden with flowers of gold, her choice was made and her doom appointed. Then for a season they wandered together in the glades of Lothlorien, until it was time for him to depart. And on the evening of midsummer, Aragorn, Arathorn's son, and Arwen, daughter of Elrond, went to the fair hill, Cerin Amroth, in the midst of the land, and they walked unshod on the undying grass with Elenor and Nifredil about their feet. And there upon that hill they looked east to the shadow and west to the twilight, and they plighted their troth and were glad. And Arwen said, "Dark is the shadow, and yet my heart rejoices, for you, Estelle, shall be among the great whose valour will destroy it." But Aragorn answered, "Alas, I cannot foresee it, and how it may come to pass is hidden from me. Yet with your hope I will hope, and the shadow I utterly reject. But neither, lady, is the twilight for me, for I am mortal, and if you will cleave to me, even star, then the twilight you must also renounce." And she stood then as still as a white tree, looking into the west, and at last she said, "I will cleave to you, Dunedain, and turn from the twilight. Yet there lies the land of my people and the long home of all my kin. She loved her father dearly. When Elrond learned the choice of his daughter, he was silent, though his heart was grieved, and found the doom long feared none the easier to endure. But when Aragorn came again to Rivendell, he called him to him, and he said, "My son, years come when hope will fade, and beyond them little is clear to me, and now a shadow lies between us. Maybe it has been appointed so, that by my loss the kingship of men may be restored. Therefore, though I love you, I say to you, Arwen Undomiel shall not diminish her life's grace for less cause. She shall not be the bride of any man less than the king of both Gondor and Arnor. To me, then, even our victory can bring only sorrow and parting, but to you hope of joy for a while. Alas, my son, I fear that to Arwen the doom of men may seem hard at the ending." So it stood afterwards between Elrond and Aragorn, and they spoke no more of this matter. But Aragorn went forth again to danger and toil. And while the world darkened and fear fell on Middle-earth, as the power of Sauron grew, and the Barad Dûr rose ever taller and stronger, Arwen remained in Rivendell, and when Aragorn was abroad, from afar she watched over him and thought. And in hope she made for him a great and kingly standard, such as only one might display who claimed the lordship of the Númenóreans and the inheritance of Elendil. After a few years, Gilrain took leave of Elrond, and returned to her own people in Eriador, and lived alone, and she seldom saw her son again, for he spent many years in far countries. But on a time, when Aragorn had returned to the north, he came to her, and she said to him before he went, "This is our last parting, Estelle, my son. I am aged by care, even as one of lesser men. And now that it draws near, I cannot face the darkness of our time that gathers upon Middle-earth. I shall leave it soon." Aragorn tried to comfort her, saying, "Yet there may be a light beyond the darkness, and if so, I would have you see it and be glad." But she answered only with this linod, "O nenni Estel edain, ut chebin Estel arnim," which means, "I gave hope to the Dunedain, I have kept no hope for myself." And Aragorn went away heavy of heart. Gilrain died before the next spring. Thus the years drew on to the War of the Ring, of which more is told elsewhere. How the means unforeseen was revealed, whereby Sauron might be overthrown, and how hope beyond hope was fulfilled. And it came to pass that in the hour of defeat, Aragorn came up from the sea and unfurled the standard of Arwen in the battle of the fields of Pelennor, and in that day he was first hailed as king. And at last, when all was done, he entered into the inheritance of his fathers, and received the crown of Gondor and sceptre of Arnor. And at midsummer, in the year of the fall of Sauron, he took the hand of Arwen Undomiel, and they were wedded in the city of the kings. The third age ended thus in victory and hope, and yet grievous among the sorrows of that age was the parting of Elrond and Arwen, for they were sundered by the sea and by a doom beyond the end of the world. When the great ring was unmade, and the three were shorn of their power, then Elrond grew weary at last, and forsook Middle-earth, never to return. But Arwen became as a mortal woman, and yet it was not her lot to die until all that she had gained was lost. As queen of elves and men she dwelt with Aragorn for 60 years in great glory and bliss. Yet at last he felt the approach of old age, and knew that the span of his life-days was drawing to an end, long though it had been. Then Aragorn said to Arwen, "At last, Lady Evenstar, fairest in this world, and most beloved, my world is fading. Lo, we have gathered, and we have spent, and now the time of payment draws near." Arwen knew well what he intended, and long had foreseen it. Nonetheless she was overborne by her grief. Would you then, Lord, before your time, leave your people that live by your word? She said. Not before my time, he answered. For if I will not go now, then I must soon go perforce. And Eldarion, our son, is a man full ripe for kingship. Then, going to the house of the kings in the silent street, Aragorn laid him down on the long bed that had been prepared for him. There he said farewell to Eldarion, and gave into his hands the winged crown of Gondor and the sceptre of Arnor. And then all left him save Arwen, and she stood alone by his bed. And for all her wisdom and lineage, she could not forbear to plead with him to stay yet for a while. She was not yet weary of her days, and thus she tasted the bitterness of the mortality that she had taken upon her. Lady Undomiel, said Aragorn, the hour is indeed hard, yet it was made even in that day when we met under the white birches in the garden of Elrond, where none now walk, and on the hill of Cerin Amroth, when we forsook both the shadow and the twilight, this doom we accepted. Take counsel with yourself, beloved, and ask whether you would indeed have me wait until I wither and fall from my high seat unmanned and witless. Nay, lady, I am the last of the Numenoreans and the latest king of the elder days, and to me has been given not only a span thrice that of men of Middle-earth, but also the grace to go at my will and give back the gift. Now, therefore, I will sleep. I speak no comfort to you, for there is no comfort for such pain within the circles of the world. The uttermost choice is before you, to repent and go to the havens and bear away into the west the memory of our days together that shall there be evergreen, but never more than memory, or else to abide the doom of men. Nay, dear Lord, she said, that choice is long over. There is now no ship that would bear me hence, and I must indeed abide the doom of men, whether I will or nill, the loss and the silence. But I say to you, King of the Numenoreans, not till now have I understood the tale of your people and their fall. As wicked fools I scorned them, but I pity them at last. For if this is indeed, as the Eldar say, the gift of the One to men, it is bitter to receive. So it seems, he said, but let us not be overthrown at the final test. Who of old renounced the shadow and the ring? In sorrow we must go, but not in despair. Behold, we are not bound forever to the circles of the world, and beyond them is more than memory. Farewell. Estelle! Estelle! She cried. And with that, even as he took her hand and kissed it, he fell into sleep. Then a great beauty was revealed in him, so that all who after came there looked on him in wonder, for they saw that the grace of his youth and the valour of his manhood and the wisdom and majesty of his age were blended together. And long there he lay, an image of the splendour of the kings of men in glory undimmed before the breaking of the world. But Arwen went forth from the house, and the light of her eyes was quenched, and it seemed to her people that she had become cold and grey as nightfall in winter that comes without a star. Then she said farewell to Eldarion and to her daughters, and to all whom she had loved, and she went out from the city of Minas Tirith, and passed away to the land of Lorien, and dwelt there alone under the fading trees until winter came. Galadriel had passed away, and Celeborn also was gone, and the land was silent. There at last, when the mallorn leaves were falling, but spring had not yet come, she laid herself to rest upon Cerin Amroth, and there is her green grave until the world is changed, and all the days of her life are utterly forgotten by men that come after, and Eleanor and Nefredil bloom no more east of the sea. Here ends this tale, as it has come to us from the south, and with the passing of Evenstar no more is said in this book of the days of old. Part 2. The House of Eol. Eol the Young was lord of the men of Eotheod. That land lay near the sources of Anduin, between the furthest ranges of the Misty Mountains and the northernmost parts of Mirkwood. The Eotheod had moved to those regions in the days of King Eärnil the Second, from lands in the vales of Anduin, between the Curragh and the Gladden, and they were in origin close akin to the Beornings and the men of the West Eaves of the Forest. The forefathers of Eol claimed descent from kings of Rovanion, whose realm lay beyond Mirkwood before the invasions of the Wainriders, and thus they accounted themselves kinsmen of the kings of Gondor, descended from Eldacar. They loved best the plains, and delighted in horses and in all feats of horsemanship, but there were many men in the middle